Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Bill Mitchell, another of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast Deep Dives. Today we are talking all about the Kansas City Royals, a team that, let's give them a lot of credit, not just has developed a star, a homegrown star in Bobby Witt Jr., but a nice kind of supporting cast, Mikel Garcia. They've locked those guys up for the longer term as well. The Royals know that they've made a playoff run 2 years ago, made it a run at the playoffs last year, and obviously are right in the mix again this year. But now, as they do so with the highest-ranked prospect we have had for the Royals since Bobby Witt Jr. at the top of their list. Bill does the Royals for us. Bill, great to see you. I'm just going to dive right into it. Like, you see the Royals a lot in Surprise. They're a spring training home, but also they're home for their complex league team and much more. And I do feel like that we've seen over the last couple of years that the talent level there has just kind of been edging up a little bit on the backfields. But I wonder what you thought.
Oh, definitely. I think that their top 30 is very deep. And I attribute more recently to two things. They brought in Brian Bridges as the director of amateur scouting. I have a high opinion of Brian, and I really like what they did with last year's draft. They had a good mix of high school and college players, and they've added a lot of talent, especially pitching. They've been very good with developing pitchers. That's one of the key attributes they have. But they've also done well internationally, and I can't wait to see some of the newer players when they bring them up this year that I haven't gotten to see. They've done a good job internationally, and I think it's bright things ahead for the Royals.
So diving in, first question we always ask is, how difficult was it to rank the number one? In this case, Carter Jensen, catcher, is their number one prospect. I'm going to guess that wasn't particularly difficult considering the season that Jensen had.
It was very easy. You know, for one, the previous number one, Jack Caglione, had graduated. And Carter, he had the season we've been waiting for him to have. He's always had low batting averages, high on-base percentages. And my question always was, is he not being aggressive enough? But no, you know, he's got the advanced swing decisions, good barrel control. He really just matured as a hitter, started picking out pitches he knew he could drive, using all fields, and it just all came together for him. His hard hit launch angle was better. A really good season, starting in Double A, even got better in Triple A, and then did well in his time in the major leagues. He's set for success. Here he is, a hometown kid, has followed the Royals all his life. It's a dream come true for him, and his favorite player was Salvador Perez, and now he's looking as he might be the one to take over when Salvi retires. That might be at age 50, but or at least at age 40, we'll say.
I feel like so. Okay, I'm old. I remember like there was this long stretch where Cal Ripken was the Orioles shortstop, and there was always the guy who was going to be the guy who would step in to replace Cal Ripken eventually. And I think that Cal at shortstop like outdid like three or four of those guys' full careers, you know, before eventually Cal did eventually succumb to age and have to move to third base, and then you know, did retire. I feel like Salvador Perez has kind of done that. You know, usually we expect catchers. It's like, okay, you know, Salvi obviously came up, was part of the Big Blue Wave, part of the World Series teams in 14 and 15. And you're like, okay, how long can a guy catch? And in his case, the answer is for a very, very long time. You know, we've had catchers come through. We've had MJ Melendez move to the outfield. We had Freddie Fermin, who was a solid backup, who got traded last year in part because Carter Jensen was ready. But it does seem like that this is the guy to logically, I think it fits very well, because when you look at this job share, you've got two guys who can catch and two guys who also can hit. So you don't need to, it's not a case of, well, this guy can catch, but on the days he doesn't, you know, Carter Jensen can absolutely DH some of the time on days that he does not catch. And Salvador Perez obviously can DH. Also, like, you know, Salvi started to play a little bit of first base as well, like potentially, like you have different ways to keep both of their bats in the lineup and both keep both of them a little bit fresh. Because I do think, though, we saw, like you mentioned, Jensen's power, like really did kind of become, it went from kind of something that we saw flashes of to something we saw very consistently last year, and kind of even showed that after he reached the majors at the end of the year. But also the feedback I think that you got was, is, you know, this is not, there's not really not a whole lot of questions about his defense either. This is a guy who should be able to stick behind the plate long-term and be a solid defensive catcher as well, right?
I got that from scouts. They had seen a lot of improvement in just his receiving, his blocking, everything related to catching. So, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. He's very athletic, too, and that's got to help. Help him behind the plate. And if he needs to play other positions, and I did ask him about that, he said, oh, I played every position when I was a kid playing travel ball and high school ball. He said, I can play anywhere, but, you know, he's a catcher at heart.
He's a catcher. And the thing I would also say with that, I know that we've used this on the podcast before, but it was eye-opening at the Futures game. Obviously, Carter Jensen was at the Futures game. And the thing that stood out to me is the easiness of that power you saw. He was matching everyone swing for swing. They have a very short kind of cool, you know, they have the restaurant and then they have the building and, you know, at Truist Park in Atlanta. And he was putting the balls on top of that plate, you know, place just basically swing for swing with pretty much anyone at the Futures game. The power is absolutely legit. I do feel like with him, like the other thing you said, like if there had been a debate here, it would have been if Jack Caglione hadn't graduated, then it would have been a fun one, an interesting one.
Yes,
because obviously Jack has massive power as well and did move very quickly to the big leagues, although his big league debut was a little bit rockier than
Jensen. But if he had stayed in the minor leagues the way he was hitting at Double A and Triple A, I think he would have still been the number one. You couldn't have taken him out of that position, but that's neither here nor there. He's in the big leagues and showing some signs of better numbers in the future.
So you've already touched on this a little bit. So I'll kind of phrase it this way. How is the system better now than it was a year ago? The one thing that's going against it is, as you said, Jack Caglione was their first round pick in, a year ago, he was prospect eligible. He's not now, but how is this system better now, do you think?
They've done a good job with developing pitchers, not as much hitters, and they had a tough time. That was their what hurt them in the major leagues. A lot of hitters did not come together. But pitching, Paul Gibson is the coordinator of pitching in minor leagues. And if you look at what they had just at high A level, they had five or six legit prospects pitching there. And then we had Kendry Churio coming up from the DSL at the age of 17 and doing well both in the ACL and then in low A. David Shields had an outstanding season. And what I like about their pitching development, it's not all about velocity. I know a lot of people wonder about David Shields because he was pitcher of the year in the Carolina League, yet he was really most of the season was around 90 miles an hour. But I've seen him higher when he first came to instructional league. I saw him up to 95. What a lot of people didn't know that he had a hamstring problem coming out of spring training, not enough to put him out of action, but they just said, dial it back and let the velocity come later. And by the end of the year, he was up to 94. And I think eventually he's going to have an above average fastball. Right now it's probably a tick below average or fringy, but he was good enough at age of 18 for most of the season to dominate the Carolina League. And I think what you're going to see with Kendry Churio is, I've talked to one individual, says, we know he can throw 98. There's questions of, can someone his size consistently throw 98 and not get hurt? But I think they're going to dial him back this year and let him learn how to pitch. And, if all of a sudden he's throwing 94, 95 and everyone panics, oh, what happened to the 98? It'll be intentional.
I in some ways, I like that. In some ways, I have a little bit of concerns because then there also is the Frank Mazzucato case where, they haven't found that there's more in the tank there, right? Like you said, Shields has shown it. Mazzucato has gone the other way. Mazzucato, first round pick from several years ago, was 92, 93, then he was 91, 92, and then we've seen high 80s. Again, there's a difference between dialing it back and having it in there when you need it versus dialing it back, but wait, where is it? It's And again, Mazzucato, the velo picked back up a little bit last year, but not, you know, again, it still's got a, you know, it just hasn't been. But when you say that, like the other thing here that kind of sets up the next question very well, which is when we look at next year's number one, I would say we can assume that Carter Jensen will graduate, but this is the organization that's got a lot of guys who I could make a case for, I feel like, that could end up being number one. Kendry Churio, I would say, is kind of in the pole position considering what he did last year. He's already number two. But Churio, Shields, Blake Mitchell, if he has a healthy year, the two first rounders from last year could also, you know, fit into that kind of discussion. How do you kind of see, like, who are the candidates who you would see for next year?
Well, you just named Churio and Shields. Now, they will be teenagers for most of the season, and I'm sure there's going to be ups and downs. Also, Mitchell, he had a hamate problem that affected him all year. And, you know, will he finally showed his timing was back and showed his power in the fall league. It took him that long from a spring training injury. So, but then also they will have the number six overall draft pick and should get a good player. They pick a college player.
Very good draft.
Do you rank him over Churio and Shields because they're still developing? That'll be an interesting choice when it gets down to it.
I would also kind of throw in that, like, yeah, number six pick in this draft should be an excellent player. Like, you are talking a range of, I think we can assume that Rock Chulosky would be off the board. You could assume that probably the top college arm in the class is off the board. I think you could probably assume Grady Emerson's off the board, the top high school shortstop. But you get beyond that, like, you're talking really good college bats this year. It feels like, you know, like, we'll see, like, whether is Justin LeBron off the board, is Drew Burris off the board, really good college bats, some really good other high school, you know, shortstops, especially. There's a lot of possibilities there where I could see that being the case for number one. But I would say, though, like, with Churio, we saw last year, like you said, he made it up to low A. The thing that stands out to me about him is you see a lot of to move a guy like they did with him, you're seeing a level of polish with him that you don't often see in pitchers that young. I wouldn't be shocked. Like, again, I could see him going to full season ball this year and just being one of the better pitchers in Class A this year, where we're kind of looking at this a year from now and saying, man, I know he's a pitcher. I know it's still A ball, you know, but there's a lot really to like here, right? Because you've got like a kind of look at what you know, you talked a little bit about the frame and all that, but like what else kind of really stood out about Churio?
Well, he hardly walked anybody. And how do you see that? How often do you see that from any pitcher, much less a 17-year-old in his first professional season, just coming to the States for the first time? And his walk rates were extremely low. And there's a big jump right there that really is a good positive sign for him. Also, and again, he was up to 98. He's going to work more like around 95, 96 this year, I suspect. And that'll be plenty of velocity.
Solid secondaries, yeah. Too. Like, this is not a guy who's just using a fastball either, which
right,
to exactly, me kind of yes. Is another thing that's a strong indicator for what you're expecting this year out of him and then beyond. But what about the first-round picks? So, obviously, Josh Hammond, Sean Gamble, they had two kind of later, you know, first round picks, but those guys kind of also, like, this will be a very interesting, we'll get to see a lot more of them this year. I'm guessing you've gotten to see probably more of them than most because, again, being in Arizona, but what should we expect to see out of them this year?
I am really high on Josh Hammond. In fact, even though Gamble was drafted a few positions before him, when I put out their final list, I had them back to back, but I had Hammond just above him. He comes from a baseball background, right? Your area in North Carolina. His dad's a longtime coach in High Point. And I talked to him, I interviewed him for an article, and I was amazed that a kid 17 years old, or maybe 18 by then, that just how well-spoken he was and intelligent, polite. The makeup is outstanding. And keep in mind, when he was coming, first coming out of high school or going into his senior year of high school, he was regarded as a prospect, as a pitcher. And he said, no, I want to play every day. So he went into the draft as a shortstop. Probably is going to be a third baseman long term. But I just really was impressed with what he did in the structural league. Gamble, I think they're still trying to figure where he fits in the field. I believe, you know, whether he was played second base in high school, he played some outfield. He's a plus runner. I think he's going to wind up in the outfield. They weren't ready to commit to that yet, but I believe that's where he's going to be. But he's got some exciting tools.
It's the Royals. Like, I can't help but not think of the fact that the Royals always need and want guys who can really run roaming center field for them. And to be honest, a lot of times roaming the corners as well. It's a big outfield there. So I would not be shocked at all by that either. Is there anyone else like Ramon Ramirez, Drew Beam? Is there anyone else who's like maybe a little further off, you know, who could kind of at least be a name to watch, like as far as maybe not being number one next year, but being a little bit in the mix for that, you know, a guy who could really kind of emerge this year? Yandel Ricardo.
I think Ramon Ramirez, I've been hearing hints that he could be the guy this year that breaks out. It really breaks out. He's got the bat. He's got power. His catching skills are still under development, because until he signed, he was more of an outfielder. Now he's built more like a catcher. He's got that big bulky build. So I think outfield was long ago. But if he continues to develop his catching skills and the bat keeps growing, I think he could be a guy that jumps up there.
So you mentioned it before. When you asked the question, what is this organization good at developing? Obviously, you know, again, Caglione just graduated. I would say that the key thing that this organization has done, and we see the value of it, is if you can, they were picking at the very near the very top of the draft. But if you pick a Bobby Witt Jr. and you develop a Bobby Witt Jr. into a homegrown MVP caliber player star, it transforms an organization. Now, it's not just that. We've also got, like I said, Michael Garcia, Vinny Pasquantino. There are others as well. But like, when you look at it, and I've got an idea of something I want to talk about after you, but I want you to go first. What do you see that this organization has been good at developing?
Well, again, like I said before, they've done a good job of developing pitchers. Like I said, the staff at High A really performed well. I don't want to say they overachieved. And again, Kendry Churio, and there's some other pitchers. There's another one coming up from the DSL. If he comes up this year, Freddie Contreras, we had him at the back end of the list. He's really, you know, still slender. He pitched most of the last year at the age of 16 in the DSL. I don't think he turned 17 till late summer. Does that mean they won't bring him up for another year? Will they leave him in the DSL? The way they moved Churio, I think I can expect to see him. And for all I know, maybe he's already in surprise and I just haven't heard that yet. So through the organization, they've just done a great job of developing pitching.
So I would actually, my answer to that would be a slight tweak of what you're saying, which is like, because, you know, I would say the thing that the Royals have really done a good job of in recent years, which is not a farm system type thing, but it is important, is their ability to identify and develop what I would describe as like second tier big league pitching. Like, so Cole Reagans is a great theft, right? They Cole Reagans for Aroldis Chapman obviously was a transformational move, because Cole Reagans, when he's been healthy, has been really good. But it goes beyond that. It's like, it's the Seth Lugos and Michael Wacha's and Noah Cameron's, helping the Chris Bubik's and, you know, and the Daniel Lynch's into valuable players after they've been around for quite a while. Brady Singer becoming valuable and then being traded, you know, in a move. I feel like they've done that a lot better in recent years. And it's really been kind of, to me, kind of one of the keys is of why this team has been, you know, in the playoff hunt in recent years. We made the playoffs again 2 years ago. We're in the hunt for all the season last year. And again, the other thing I kind of want to say with that is it's sad to say that this is something that deserves credit, but the Royals do deserve a lot of credit in that there are a lot of smaller market, lower revenue teams who kind of seem to kind of throw their, you know, their hands up in the air and say, oh, well, you know, it's, you know, we're not going to be able to sign guys or whatever. The Royals would not have been as good as they have been in recent years without signing free agents, making some good trades, spending some money. And then because kind of, I'm saying partly, maybe probably because you're able to do that, then you are also able to lock up your star. Like the Royals fans know that if you're a Royals fan, you got to see Salvador Perez. Well, I would expect you're going to be able to see Salvador Perez play the entirety of his career. An all-time great for the Royals, play his entire career for the Royals. But now, you also, like, Bobby Witt Jr., there is a high likelihood, if the Royals so desire, and Witt so desires, there's options down the road, but, like, Bobby Witt Jr. is at least going to be a Royal, should be a Royal through the entirety of his time as a star, and there's a good chance that he's going to just be a Royal for life. And That's a huge to me, not just a sales pitch of for a team to, for a smaller market, lower revenue team to have a guy like that for the long term, but as a fan to know that you're going to have this guy, it is easier. Again, if you think of it from a fan perspective, to me, it is easier as a fan to fall in love with your team when you know that you have some players that are there that have real staying power. And I can't think of someone that would be better to have to be able to know that than with Bobby Witt Jr., a guy who, you know, is 25 now, is already a big league star, but you can say, okay, he's probably signed for many, many, many years to come. That's to me another thing that really does stand out about, you know, what the Royals have done in recent years. And again, is a credit to not just front office, but, you know, to basically the overall plan of what they've done. That's going to wrap up the video portion of this on the YouTube side. But if you want more on the podcast feed, we'll be back right after this quick break. And we're back. So, Bill, looking beyond the top 10, what are some names to know after the 10th spot on that? Because you said this has gotten to be a deeper system.
I mentioned before, Freddy Contreras. I'm anxious to see him. Coming up from the DSL, if he comes up this year. Keep an eye on Steven Zobach, who had a knee injury last year that affected his landing knee. And we will talk more later about knee injuries, pitchers. But I think Zobach would have been in the big leagues last year if he hadn't had the injury. So, and he's on the 40-man roster. Look for him this year. Watch out for Michael Lombardi, who did not pitch in official games after the after the draft. He was drafted out of Tulane. He was a two-way player, basically a DH, maybe played some outfield, but then also a relief pitcher. The Royals were on here, and I had a long talk with Brian Bridges about how they scouted him. I wrote about that one of my Royals player features, how well they scouted him, and they were convinced that he could build up to he could build up to be a starter. They drafted him to be a starting pitcher. And what they saw so far in instructional league last year, I believe that they're right. Another one I'm anxious to see where he does this year is Dennis Colleran. This guy, he's electric stuff. Throws in the high 90s, touches into the triple digits. He was out of Northeastern where he was a starting pitcher and didn't do as well there, but he's also got a good slider. He just needs to throw more strikes, better control, but he could be a back-end bullpen guy. So those are some of my favorites to watch out for in that team or that organization.
So, and you've said, like, there is also, you've mentioned a couple of guys who are coming over. I do think that they're also, like, you know, some of them might be end up being role players. Some of them we'll see what they develop into. But on the international side, they've also had guys, you know, come over. Like, you know, we got Aspel Gonzalez. We got Warren Calcano, and we've got Ransom Medina. There are some guys here, like, that when I read about them, I'm like, okay, that's, you know, there's something interesting there to see kind of how it develops, how it comes together. But you mentioned it, those are, I also highlight those in some ways because those are some of the position players. You get past about 15 on this list, and man, is it pitching heavy. Is that intentional, yeah. Do you think?
Well, again, you know, when I said they've been really good at developing pitchers, I think they don't try to do a cookie cutter approach. You know, they work to the pitcher's strengths. Hunter Patterson is in the 21 to 30 range, and they've really gotten the best out of him, and he's improved. He's a little older because he was a college guy, missed time to Tommy John surgery. So, you know, you look at, okay, here's, I think he's like 25 now, and you know, hasn't been above double A, but, you know, give him time. And I think you're going to see something from Hunter Patterson this year.
But I do look, when we look at this, the last question, and again, you know, I kind of have some opinions here too, like, is when we look at the Royals right now, the interesting thing is I feel like that they're right now, they're kind of in a spot of where they're just kind of like, they're going for it. Like, this is not a team that's aiming for the future. I think that the window is now. Now, the window is not the same window as like the Dodgers window or the Mets window. It's 90 wins and a playoff spot, and then see what you do in the playoffs, I think is a hopeful goal for this team. But kind of how do you kind of, like, how has it changed? You've been doing the Royals for a while for us now. I feel like it's at a different spot than it was, you know, a couple of years ago when you were doing this.
Yeah, when I first started doing it, they weren't trading prospects for big leaguers at that point. But they've done that more recently. Last year was a bad year. The hitting was not there. Their outfield, their combined outfield, and I don't know the numbers, but their combined outfield was just, you know, their numbers were just abysmal. And they're making steps to improve that.
They need Jack to hit this year.
Yes. Last year, their big acquisition was Jonathan India, and he didn't do quite what they wanted, you know, from top of the order. This year, they've made small moves. They picked up Isaac Collins from Milwaukee, who was a surprise last year at their age of 28. Can play both outfield and infield, but you know, will he repeat that? They signed Lane Thomas, who really has been hurt most of the last 2 years. Before that, he was at least a good platoon outfielder playing center field. He could always hit left-handers. So will Lane Thomas contribute this year? But they need bounce backs from other players more than anything else.
And they need help, I would say. Like, you know, obviously Pasquantino's been a guy who's had some struggles with injuries. Obviously, they have to have Bobby Witt Jr. and Michael Garcia, I would say. Like, the other thing to me that really does stand out that jumps out is that is defensively as good a left side of the infield as you probably have in the American League. Does help pitching staff too. And especially if, again, Isaac Collins was great defensively, you know, at least analytically in 2025. Let's see how he plays in left. If Isbell can be a solid center fielder, Jack is not going to be a great right fielder. I don't think there's any, because, you know, that's not, I don't think that's going to be something that you can really count on. But defensively, this team could be very good as well. And we'll see how it all develops. So that's another of the Baseball America deep dives. We hope you enjoyed this one. If you did, do check out on the YouTube channel and on the podcast feed. We are almost home. We have very few of these left to go, and we are rolling out one for each and every organization. I would say that when you're listening to this, by this time next week, we'll have all 30 up. For Bill, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.